Hey, True Seekers, good evening. Well, it's not Bounce Your Boobies, but that is the Friday theme. Welcome to the program tonight. My name is Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. And it's about 7 past the hour. I watched a little ABC News tonight, and the anchor there, Charlie Gibson, asked Judas Stephanopoulos about Barack Obama foregoing public money because he can raise so much more than McCain, and he's going to need it since the 527 attack ads from these sick, putrid Republicans will be overwhelming. And, you know, last night I commented on that. I have other things to bitch about Obama tonight. But last night I said, oh, what's this? He broke his promise. Without realizing that, first of all, he never should have made the promise to begin with. Secondly, you don't go to a gunfight with a pocket knife. And apparently that's what the screamers want Barack Obama to do. Everybody knows that he can outraise Bush or outraise McCain, same thing, enormously on the Internet or wherever else Barack Obama goes to raise money. Nobody wants McCain to be president. But in order to fight back against the 527 ads, so-called, those are ads by so-called outside groups that are really not so-called partisan for the Republican candidate. They're just trying to point out the issues, you know, like Barack Obama's father was a juju man in some tribal cave in deepest Nairobi or, you know, stuff like that. So Obama realized if he took federal money, public money, he was going to be outspent by these people. So he made what to me is a tactical decision, and people can get their pants in a wad about it if they want to. I know I did last night, but I think in the morning light I saw what he was trying to do, although I do have some complaints about him later on tonight. Anyway, all that by digressive explanation. So Charlie Gibson asked Stephanopoulos about Obama's decision not to take public money. And the way Gibson asked the question was incredible. Charlie Gibson said to Judas Stephanopoulos, now these are the two, this is the frickin' frack clown act that made such asses of themselves during the last or one of the last debates between Clinton and Obama. But Charlie asked Judas that since we in America, George, believe in, you know, starting from an equal place, we believe in a fair fight, is it really fair, Charlie said, for one candidate to have such an advantage? In other words, more money. I about fell off my chair when I heard that one, because it was, yeah, Gibson might as well have said, look, Obama is a real punk ass. I don't like him. I love John McCain because he's so manly. And, you know, the punk ass is going to try to outspend the manly guy, which is just not fair, is it, George? Well, Stephanopoulos, as much of a traitor as he is, was, you know, you could see the fact he was a little bit nonplussed by the question. Not always do they rehearse the questions and the answers. The anchor may say down the line, off the air, to whoever they're going to interview, I'm going to ask you about this or that. But, you know, they don't really rehearse it. So it was real clear that Stephanopoulos was not quite sure what to say. He didn't go for the bait. He gave some kind of mediocre, warmed-over answer. But I thought it was very telling, it was to me anyway, that Charlie Gibson might as well have said what he said. You know, this effete elitist is challenging our war hero, George. and he's doing it unfairly. He's actually bringing a gun to a gunfight. We can't have that. I hate these people. Jesus, I hate them. Barry in Oregon sent this in. This is from Columbus, Ohio. The school board of a small central Ohio community voted unanimously today to fire a teacher. The school board members voted 5-0 to fire Mount Vernon Middle School science teacher John Freshwater. Now, what do you suppose he did? Well, he's accused. Apparently, he's going to have a hearing to challenge the dismissal. But the school board rightly got rid of this freak as quickly as possible. But he's accused of preaching his own personal Christian beliefs, despite complaints from the rest of the school staff, to his middle school students. Now, how old are they? 10, 11, and 12? And he also used a device to burn the image of a cross on students' arms. Kathy just said, what? Yeah, he was preaching his foul, stinky Christian beliefs and using a device to burn the image of a cross on students' arms. Now, John Freshwater denies any wrongdoing. Well, of course not. You know, preaching Christian beliefs and burning crosses into someone's arm, that's not wrongdoing. And he's going to request a hearing, according to the Mount Vernon News. That's where this happened, Mount Vernon, Ohio. School board members met a day after the consulting firm, so-and-so-and, released its report on the teacher's case. The report came a week after a family filed a lawsuit in U.S. District Court in Columbus against Freshwater and the school district, saying Freshwater burned a cross on their child's arm that remained there for 3 to 4 weeks. Now, obviously, he didn't take a hot poker, or it would have remained there for the kid's life. I don't know what he used. Maybe it was a chemical burn. I have no idea. But burning a cross on students' arms, these are middle school kids. Middle school kids. 10, 11, 12-year-olds. Do you believe in Jesus? Come here, you little snot! Hold your arm out! Ah! Jesus loves you! I can't stand it. I really, really, really can't. We're talking about Islamic fundamentalist terrorists. I would rather deal with Muslim terrorists on a one-to-one basis than a Christian terrorist. I really would. Simple Scotty had the stage today. We only have a couple of sound bites from that yawning, as in, oh, really? Hearing today before, the House Judiciary Committee, John Conyers. And it was fun. When I watched him, it was fun to watch the Republican members of this committee go after Simple Scotty, not after the facts, but after Simple Scotty, using such creative, original terms like, it just pains me to see that Scott McClellan sold out his president for a few pieces of silver. Oh, please. Would just bite me, will you? A few pieces of silver? Oh, hasn't that just been worn down to a nub? Yes, it has. Anyway, in his testimony today, of course, it centered on the Valerie Plame scandal, which, as you remember, was probably the real reason Ari Fleischer was scuttled out of the White House press room, because he knew too much. And, you know, his plausible deniability was being compromised. All right, this is from the opening remarks today to the committee. Here is Simple Scotty McClellan.
I'm here because in my heart I'm a public servant who, like many Americans, wants to improve the way Washington governs and does not want to see future administrations repeat the mistakes this White House made.
Quack, quack.
I do not know whether a crime was committed by any of the administration officials
quack,
who revealed Valerie Plame's identity to reporters, nor do I know if there was an attempt by any person or persons
quack
to engage in a cover-up during the investigation.
Quack, quack.
I do know that it was wrong to reveal our identity
quack
because it compromised the effectiveness of a covert official
quack,
for
quack,
political
quack
reasons. I regret that I played a role, however unintentionally, in relaying false information to the public about it. I'll do my best to answer any questions on this matter that members of the committee may wish to ask.
I don't know whether a crime was committed by any of the administration officials who revealed Valerie Plame's identity report. You don't know? Well, the simple Scotty. Let me clue you in. Most of America and a lot of legal scholars say yes. Big crime. Really big crime. Nor do I know, he says, if there was an attempt by any person or persons to engage in a cover-up. You've never heard of Scooter Libby? One question for you, Scotty. Even though John Conyers and the rest of the Democrats were just slobbering all over you today, what good is your testimony? I mean, really. You know, we've heard it before. We know about your book. It's out there. You don't know if anyone committed any crimes. Uh-huh. We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
I'd like to know who leaked. If anybody's got any information, you ought to take it to the Justice Department so we can find out the leaker.
Yeah, that's a good idea. That's a good idea because the Bush crime family, the Bush administration is all about behaving itself, right? 22 past the hour. Here's the last one from Simple Scotty McClellan before the House Judiciary Committee today. Scotty explained how he became personally involved in his part of the lie that Irving Libby perpetrated, that he, Libby, was not involved in leaking Valerie Plame's identity.
That Saturday morning, I received a call from the White House Chief of Staff, Andy Card, and he said that the President and Vice President had spoken that morning, and they wanted me to provide the same assurances for Scooter Libby that I had for Karl Rove. I was reluctant to do it, but I headed into the White House that Saturday morning. I talked with Andy Card, and I said I would provide the same assurances for Scooter Libby, provided he gave me the same assurances that Karl Rove had. And I got on the phone with Scooter Libby and asked him point blank, were you involved in this in any way? And he assured me in unequivocal terms that he was not, meaning the leaking of Valerie Plame's identity to any reporters.
Sounds like he lied. the part that I love today, the one part of the testimony was when one of the Democrats on the committee asked Scotty if he would believe testimony from Karl Rove that was taken not under oath, in other words, unsworn testimony. And McClellan's answer was simply no. And then the representative said, well, would you believe him if the testimony was taken under oath? McClellan said no again. He hemmed and hauled around, but, you know, I mean, it was very, very obvious what he was saying. Well, it happened as we all knew it would. The vote today was 293 to 129 to crush the Fourth Amendment. It no longer exists. We now have the first 9 amendments to the U.S. Constitution that represents the Bill of Rights. And the Fifth Amendment there is getting weaker and weaker. So we actually have 8 amendments that constitute the Bill of Rights. Explain that to your rising middle schooler. Just make sure that you don't burn a cross in his or her arm. But try to explain that to the kids. I mean, those of us who have children who are approaching that age when they're going to want to know a few things about American history and government, I guess they will. I I guess. What are we going to say? What are we going to do now when we talk about ratification of the U.S. Constitution and how it was held up because several of the framers didn't like the fact that certain things were not explicitly laid out? So they came up with the first 10 amendments, which were called the Bill of Rights because they have to do with rights of citizens of the United States. How are we going to explain to our little ones now as they get involved in their elementary and middle school careers that the Bill of Rights was nothing more than a theory? It's the theory of the Bill of Rights. All these things are in theory. And like a lot of theories, they can be, you know, set aside. Now, I'm not talking about theories from the scientific community, because that's just a word that's used to say this is the way it is until evidence proves otherwise. But the theory of the Bill of Rights. So that's what, I guess, that's what you and I, if you have students, kids in your family, that's what you're going to say. Well, you know, Susie, the theory back then was that we needed a Fourth Amendment because it had been around since, the 13th century, when British noblemen impressed upon the British king that this nonsense of breaking into their castles and seizing whatever they wanted had to end. Oh, that's right, and the serfs, too. Let's include them. So it had been around for a long time. And the fact that it no longer exists can be laid at the foot of, well, actually, at the feet of Nancy Pelosi. Because had she done her job, that is to enforce the Constitution, Bush and Cheney would have been grievously wounded by now, legally, because of impeachment hearings that would have resulted in a trial before the Senate. Probably not a conviction, because there are still way too many Republicans crawling around the Senate chambers that must be removed from office legally and peacefully. I always have to say that, right? So Nancy Pelosi has two distinctions. Not only was she the first female speaker of the U.S. House, but she is also the woman who erased the Fourth Amendment. Baby, you're lost. I'm tired of fighting. I'm tired of fighting. Fighting for love.
On what used to be solid ground. Nobody was ever gonna get
signed. It's 25 before the hour. So the Washington Post tomorrow calls it an overwhelming bipartisan vote. Huh? The effort today by Steny Hoyer and Nancy Pelosi to destroy the Fourth Amendment. And it's is it time yet? No, not quite. Not quite time to abandon the Democratic Party. Not quite time. Why are we holding on? What is it we're waiting for? We're waiting for what? To see what Obama does? The law extends, adds to, broadens the executive branch's capability to eavesdrop and snoop and violate personal privacy in this country, most notably those privacies guaranteed by the Fourth Amendment. And, of course, the shield for the telecommunications companies from lawsuits for cooperating in this criminal enterprise. Now, somebody suggested today, was it John Dean on Oberman's program, that the law is so poorly written that there's a possibility that there is still a chance for criminal prosecution? This pretty much does away with the civil suits. I believe there are about 40 of them that will now be flushed down the commode. People who didn't quite appreciate the fact that the telecoms and the Bush crime family conspired to violate the Constitution of the United States. You know, just, you know. But John Dean suggests maybe tossing straws to those of us who are drowning in this swamp developed by the Democratic Party, that maybe Barack Obama, when he gets to be president, if he does get to be president, will respond to this. Didn't he say he did? Or say he would? He would, you know, take a look at the crimes committed by George Bush, including the FISA violations. So maybe there's still a chance. You think? Am I being silly? Oh, he's being silly again. Well, if John Dean said it, maybe there is a possibility. Anyway, it was 293 to 129. It's my understanding that the Democrats who sold out, there are 105 Democrats who decided that the Fourth Amendment has seen its day, run its course, it's time to move on from that silliness. As the freak said the other night, Chris Bond from Missouri, Republican, that when, you know, when your government tells you to do something, you better goddamn do it. You know, this is not softball we're playing here. This is the new American century. New American century. Kathy from Arcade, New York, wrote in, I just heard that awful quote from a Missouri idiot who said that when the government tells you to do something, you need to do it. These people make it very difficult not to make references to Hitler and the Nazis. I'll leave it at that. So by an overwhelming bipartisan vote, as tomorrow's Washington Post calls it, we have ended the Fourth Amendment. Now, the First Amendment is effectively gone, at least parts of it. Fifth Amendment, forget about it. Is it the Eighth Amendment that calls for a speedy trial? Which one is that, Kathy? Do you remember? Where's my little constitutional thing? Yeah, we need to have Robert Byrd on here. Today, a very terrible thing happened. It's an absolute assault on Jesus. I love listening to that guy because I just know that the next breath he takes, the next sentence he tries to get out, he's going to choke on it and just keel over dead. You know, I have not seen a senator die on television. So that would be interesting. My friends. The bill also provides cover for AT&T, Verizon Communications, and other firms to Deep Six's 40 lawsuits brought by customers that said, wait a second, I didn't, can you hear me now, had nothing to do with, are you going to take my Fourth Amendment? Obama said in a statement, oh, by the way, only one Republican opposed the bill, but the Democrats, of course, were pretty much evenly divided. As the Post says, the legislation presented a fresh foreign policy dilemma for Senator Barack Obama. Oh, really? Why? Obama announced his support of the FISA bill. Hey, moveon.org, are you aware of this? Hey, everybody. Hey, all you liberal groups, are you aware of this? He had a statement today, quote, given the legitimate threats we face, providing effective intelligence collection tools with appropriate safeguards is too important to delay. So I am supporting the compromise, but do so with a firm pledge that as president, I will carefully monitor the program. End quote. Well, what about that? Now, Obama had previously opposed the Senate version, which passed back in February, because it gave, in his words, blanket immunity to the telecoms. He issued a statement to that effect at the time. So what do you call this today, Senator? Blanket immunity, sheet immunity, bedspread immunity. What do you call this? It's pretty clear, Senator Obama. Senator Obama, yoo-hoo! You're not going to turn out to be a Class A son of a bitch, too, are you? Are you? Oh, no. Oh, no. John McCain, of course, supports the FISA legislation. Now, some people will tell you, as a matter of fact, I think Obama's presumptive chief of staff said it today that, from a political point of view, I'm paraphrasing, political point of view, what can we do? It's going to be a hard fought battle against John McCain. So, we have to pretend like we really support it. He didn't say that, but that was the flavor, to me anyway, of what he was saying on, who was it, Wolf Blitzer? Was it Wolf Blitzer show? Pelosi said she supported the bill primarily because it rejects, now this, you talk about Orwellian doublespeak, newspeak. Listen to this. Pelosi said she supported the bill primarily because it rejects Bush's argument that a wartime chief executive has the, quote, inherent authority, end quote, to conduct surveillance activity that he considers necessary to fighting terrorism. She also said it restores the legal notion that the FISA law is the exclusive rule on government spying. In other words, and then she added, this is a democracy, it's not a monarchy. Son of a bitch. So Nancy Pelosi is saying, I support it because it rejects Bush's argument that he has the inherent authority. He doesn't have the inherent authority. We do. So we are going to strip out the Fourth Amendment and give Bush the finger when actually this is exactly what Bush and any chief executive who wants to destroy the Fourth Amendment would do. You see how this works? But this is a democracy, not a monarchy. It's not a democracy, Pelosi. It never has been. In fact, that is what the Bill of Rights is all about. Oh, my God. No, majority doesn't rule, Madam Speaker. The rights of the minority have to be protected. That's what makes us a democratic republic, not a democracy. Oh, well, he's getting into that argument now. We're not really a democracy. The hell we're not. No, we really aren't. So Nancy Pelosi did it to us. Nancy Pelosi and Steny Hoyer, and over on the Senate side, Harry Reid is going to do it to us. And Kathy, check the mail next week. See if we received a packet of bendover stamps. Probably won't even get a little reach around with a squeeze on the ass for this one, right? Nah. Unbelievable stuff, but not so unbelievable if you are really, 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 really a leftist in this country. You saw this coming. And those of us who are only liberals saw it coming, too. But we said, no, 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 no. It's not going to happen. We busted our ass back in 06 to give the Democrats marginal because we had to overcome the thefts, the stealing. But we gave them control of the House and the Senate. So they're not going to do this to us. They won't do this to us.
Might be a good time to mention that coming up on Monday, our guest will be Cindy Sheehan, who is going to challenge Nancy Pelosi in California.
I wonder what the people in her district are going to do. I just can't see the people in the district she represents saying, well, we have an historical member of Congress here. She's the Speaker of the House. Let's throw her out. Yeah, but she deserves to be thrown out. Well, Fourth Amendment, there might be some terrorists. Let's keep Nancy. I just have a feeling that a large plurality of voters in Nancy's home district around San Francisco are going to feel that way. Gosh, I hope I'm wrong.
East, enrich the CEO. Lie down, people. Lay down your Bill of Rights. Tell James Madison we had to let those amendments go.
I feel it in my bones. My life is on the line, but I'm away from. I don't email, however. And there's a reason. I don't want you reading my personal stuff.
I don't believe my eyes. I will not fall in love. I cannot miss the bed. It's hard to grab the toys. So easy to forget.
10 before the hour. As Glenn Greenwald points out today in his ongoing deep examination of what is happening regarding the FISA issue, the best writing out there on this topic right now is Glenn Greenwald at Salon.com. But as he said today, this whole controversy, let's keep this in mind, the whole controversy began because George Bush in December of 2005 got caught breaking the law and having done so for years. Greenwald writes, he did so because he embraced a radical and un-American theory that asserted he has the power to break all of our laws, provided such lawbreaking is, in his view, related to the defense of the nation. And it's lengthy. Greenwald's article is lengthy. We'll post a link to what he has today in Salon at our website when we're finished with the program tonight. But I don't know exactly how to think about this at all, and I'm embarrassed by the confusion. If this had been Republicans who had decided to use their power to end the Fourth Amendment, I would know exactly what to do. I'd be screaming all over the room about these fascist sons of bitches. But it was Democrats, and it takes some readjustment, just a slight. I'm trying to avoid whiplash. And I don't know if I can, because it is clear now, isn't it, that there is a huge, huge, the majority of the Democrats in the U.S. House, the majority, well, no, not quite the majority, 105 of them are traitors to the Constitution and the oath they took and are selling us down the river. And I apologize for the use of that kind of a metaphor with or simile with what's going on in the Midwest, but is that a simile? I don't know. But the Democratic Party leadership, they found 105 Democrats who would submit to Pelosi and Steny Hoyer. And I don't care. I don't care what the tactic is. I don't care what the strategic plan is. No matter what the Democrats do at this point, I guess they've come to realize Barack Obama is going to be the next president of the United States. It's probably going to be a 50-state a wipeout, or at least 40-state wipeout. I just have a feeling that's what's going to happen. Why wouldn't that give the Democratic leadership, the Democratic Party leadership in both houses, extreme confidence that they can finally stand up for the Constitution, the American people, and the Democratic Party? Why? Unless they're part of the problem, which is apparently what it is. So again, I'm trying to avoid whiplash. I'm trying to be a good Democrat. I'm trying to remember the Democratic Party way back in the day when the Democratic Party meant something, stood for something. But these swinish bastards now, I am getting to the point where, no, I keep flip-flopping. I'm just going to keep it to myself because it's very boring. I mean, nobody gives a damn except Kathy and me what I think politically. Nobody gives a damn except Kathy and me about what she thinks politically or how we're going to vote or whatever. But the disgust that I feel right now is difficult to deal with. It's one thing to cut the Democrats in Congress and both houses of Congress, and even Democrats who have had cabinet positions and said things or done things over the past 20 years, and you think, well, Jesus, I should be condemning that, but I'll keep my mouth shut and go along with it because I am a Democrat. Well, I won't keep my mouth shut, but I'll go along with the Democrats anyway because even though they're doing things I don't like, they're still Democrats. You know, that's over. That's gone now. That is totally gone. That's gone for me. And according to the emails that I'm getting from you folks, a lot of you people feel the same way. And to the Chicken Littles out there who say, but Mike, it is critically important that we have a Democrat in office because of the Supreme Court. You know, I'll say it again. Who put Sammy the Fish Alito and John the player? What's John the Supreme Court Chief Justice John Roberts? Who put those two on the Supreme Court? And if they have normal life expectancy, they will probably be there for another 25 or 30 years. Who put them there? Republicans? No. Democrats. So what are you people talking about? You people who send me the emails, the near hysteria in your emails about, Mike, son of a bitch, don't say that. Don't turn people against Hillary or Obama. What about the Supreme Court? What about the Supreme Court? What about the Supreme Court? And my answer is usually when I get those hysterical emails, I just, you know, I try to ignore them and just think, Jesus Christ, where have you been? Where have you been? Who put the last two extreme right-wingers on the Supreme Court when they could have stopped it? Right! Democrats! So what does that mean? You know, I have people who listen to this program regularly and people who don't. But I get emails from both who question my sanity because I can, more or less, I mean, they don't come right out, but it's, that's kind of the subtext. You know, are you crazy, Malloy? What's the matter? You sound like a reasonably intelligent person. You have a radio show. You're, you know, you're married. You got a kid. You know, a bunch of kids, really. Why do you sound like a stupid ass? Why do you sound so ridiculous? There is no difference. The Democrats are going to stick it in and break it off the same way that the Republicans are. Hello, Mike. Mike, wake up. Ah! The Supreme Court! Ah! I've always hated whiplash because it hurts. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us on Nova M Radio. Welcome back. Malloy here on Nova M Radio. Going back to this FISA thing and Barack Obama. In the past, Barack Obama supported Chris Dodd's filibuster over at, what have I got here, Crooks and Liars, which is up right now. John Amato, his posting that went up this afternoon. In the past, Obama supported a filibuster against having in any FISA rewrite immunity for lawbreaking for the telecoms. This is what he said the last time this thing was being presented. This is what came from his campaign. It's official. Obama will back a filibuster of any Senate FISA legislation containing telecom immunity. His campaign has just told Election Central. The Obama campaign has just sent over the following statement from spokesman Bill Burton. Quote, to be clear, Barack will support a filibuster of any bill that includes retroactive immunity for telecommunications companies, end quote. Now, that was a big deal at the time, right? But Obama came out with a statement, and I had part of it from Glenn Greenwald's article at Salon. Here's the rest of it. After months of negotiation, this is Obama's statement. After months of negotiation, the House today passed a compromise that, while far from perfect, is a marked improvement over last year's Protect America Act. It does, however, grant retroactive immunity, and I will work in the Senate to remove this provision so that we can seek full accountability for past offenses. But as Greenwald points out, he says he's going to work to remove amnesty from the bill, but once that fails, he's going to vote for the compromise, the so-called compromise. As Greenwald writes, Obama has obviously calculated that sacrificing the rule of law and the Fourth Amendment is a worthwhile price to pay to bolster his standing a tiny bit in a couple of swing states. So which is it going to be? Can you figure it out? What is the presumptive nominee for the Democratic Party going to do? Is he going to support FISA? Is he going to not support it? Is he going to support a filibuster to get out the section that grants retroactive immunity for violation of the law? Or is he not? Or once that fails, is he then going to go ahead and say, well, okay, I'll throw my hands up in the air, I'll just vote for it. Now, the Senate version should come up relatively soon also. Certainly before the summer break. Bridget writes in, I remind myself that there were 128 Democrats who voted no. You know, I pointed out there are 105 that voted yes, along with Pelosi. Bridget says there are 128 Democrats who voted no. It is time to clean out the party and take it back. But there are some, a majority in fact, who are not ready to throw out the Constitution. Well, that's true. Bridget writes, what it's really time to do, for my money, is to rally behind Cindy Sheehan in her bid to defeat Nancy Pelosi, the most delusional representative ever elected to the House, and that's going a piece. And then there's Obama. Oh, God, Mike, maybe there really isn't any hope.
Ah!
Somebody make it stop! But it's not going to stop. And besides, we're not going to be paying too much attention to this too much longer because a third Bush war is just over the horizon. And it's a horizon that's very close. You know that as well as I do. What are we going to do then? Huh? I don't know. So I guess what I'm doing, and I'd love to know what you're doing. I guess what I'm doing is just kind of crossing my fingers and hoping and wishing upon a star and dancing around inside fairy circles, hoping that what I would like to see happen really happens, and that is that the Democrats become Democrats again and that the... Christ, what am I saying? Barack Obama also today, speaking about the... NAFTA. Looks like he's backing down on that, too. Is this true? Is he backing down on everything? According to the Toronto Star, Barack Obama, who once vowed to use the hammer of opting out of NAFTA to force the renegotiation of the trade pact, now says he will seek change through dialogue if he's elected U.S. president. Well, there's nothing wrong with that. He says in the upcoming edition of Fortune magazine that campaign rhetoric can sometimes get overheated and amplified. What? And he denies he would move to unilaterally reopen the trilateral trade deal. So what does that mean? If he can't get president of Mexico and the prime minister of Canada to agree to a sit-down, I'm not sure what that means. Obama's comments surfaced on the eve of Canadian appearance by his rival, John McCain. Obama dialed back his anti-NAFTA stance in an interview with Fortune the same day he said he received a congratulatory phone call from Prime Minister Stephen Harper on winning enough convention delegates to get... Obama said in the Fortune interview, I'm not a big believer in doing things unilaterally. I'm a big believer in opening up a dialogue and figuring out how we can make this work for all people. Okay. Now, at a debate in Cleveland in the final days of the Ohio primary back in March, Obama agreed with Hillary Clinton when she said the six-month opt-out clause should be invoked on NAFTA to force changes. And back then, Obama said, quote, I think we should use the hammer of a potential opt-out as leverage to ensure that we actually get labor and environmental standards that are enforced, end quote. So is he changing? Is he changing? I don't know. I don't know anymore. I don't know anything. We ought to change, Kathy. We ought to change the nature of this program because the doo-doo is really going to hit the fan. I think we're all pretty much aware of that. Another war. And this is now, Iran is not Iraq. Now, of course, Bush doesn't know that. The Israelis know it. The U.S. military knows it. But Iran is not Iraq. This is going to be an Air Force Navy war, a massive bombardment, and the deaths of God knows how many Iranians. The largest Iranian population outside of Iran, I believe, is in Southern California. What's going to happen to those people once we launch this attack, the slaughter of Iranians? What's going to happen to them? Is this going to be like the Japanese internment camps after the attack on Pearl Harbor? You know, we were attacked then, but it makes no difference anymore. What's going to happen to the huge Iranian community in Southern California, the ones in near Dearborn, Michigan? What's going to happen to them? Anybody thought about that? What are they going to do? How are they going to respond to a massive attack against their relatives and families back in Iran? Are they going to say, well, they all have to die, my grandchildren and my cousins and my nieces and nephews, they all have to die because of Ahmadinejad and, you know, his nuclear reactors that he wants to build? You know, the Israelis are right. The U.S. intelligence community is right. All of them have to die and crumble into dust, and, you know, little arms and legs blown off again, and children murdered and people dead, and, you know, because the Israelis and the Americans are correct. And is that what the Iranian-Americans are going to do? Will they protest? What happens if they protest? Because I doubt seriously if non-Iranian-Americans will mount much of a protest. Oh, there'll be the usual crowd of you know, socialists and left-wingers who will say, no, there shouldn't be this kind of killing. But the vast majority of Americans are just going to sit back and say, well, what are you going to do? But what about Iranian Americans? What do you think they're going to do? And what do you think the military in Iran is going to do? Do you think that they are going to be like the Iraqis and just kind of roll over and say, go ahead, napalm me, white phosphorus me, poison gas me? Yeah, okay. Go ahead. Bomb me. Bomb my cities. Kill my families. I'm just going to lay here and take it. Do you really think that's going to happen? Lots to think about, Truth Seeker. Walked on your tiptoes. Don't tie no bows. Better stay away from those that carry around a fire hose. Keep a clean nose. Wash the clean clothes. You don't need a weatherman to know it's where the wind blows.
You're listening to Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio. Turn down your speakers. It'll be our secret.
For all of you A Moment with Bob fans, we have one coming up after the next break. And we now link these at our website, our topics for the evening or the week or whatever the hell it is. I'm getting very frustrated. Pakistani President Pervez Musharraf and American President George W. Bush are among the world's least trusted leaders, along with Iran's Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. That's a new survey, result of a new survey in 20 countries, including India. This is from an Indian news agency. Musharraf has the poorest ratings around the world. I think it's Musharraf and Bush. You know who is more popular around the world than Bush? And that is Ahmadinejad. He gets negative ratings in 13 nations the most after Bush and Musharraf. Musharraf has the poorest ratings. Just two countries, India and Nigeria, give Bush positive ratings. 16 of the 20 countries surveyed say they lack confidence in the U.S. president. British Prime Minister Gordon Brown gets positive ratings in six nations, more than any other chief of state. This was conducted January 10th and May 6th by, who did it? Who's the thug that did it? WorldPublicOpinion.org. They conducted the poll of about 20,000 respondents in 20 nations, including China, India, the U.S., Indonesia, Nigeria, and Russia, Mexico, Argentina, Britain, France, and Spain. If you read into the poll, you can get the whole thing online. How do you get it online? You can get it at worldpublicopinion.org. worldpublicopinion.org. And you can look at the mind-numbing breakdown. There's just too many numbers, too many things to consider in their poll. It's like, oh my God. But if you take the time to look through it and see how the U.S. ranks, we are so far down the list of countries that get any kind of respect whatsoever as a result of Bush. It's staggering. Giovanna writes from somewhere outside of Boston. Mike, I thought I was going to have a stroke this afternoon on learning of the FISA vote today in the House. As you've been saying all along, America has been bought and sold to the corporations, with the oil companies and telecoms topping the list. Mussolini and Hitler would be proud. In any case, just after hearing Tom Hartman almost swear on the air this afternoon, no, I felt a little bit better when I saw that Congress's approval is now a whopping 12%. I was going to go to the car and have a good cry, but that might have to wait, as there's a teeny tiny bit of a glimmer of hope. We can hope the Senate will send this bill to the deepest bowels of hell when they get it. I'm happy that my entire state representation voted a resounding no, and have hope that both Kerry and Kennedy will make me proud. Can we here in Massachusetts secede? John Adams, and I know he was a bit of a neocon in his day, would be proud. I don't want to dash your hopes, Giovanna, but the Senate... The Senate? No. It's going to pass in the Senate. There is not the slightest bit of question. Look at the breakdown. When you factor in Holy Joe Lieberman, look at the breakdown. What is it, 50-50, 49? What's the breakdown? It is so close. How many votes you need in the Senate to cut off a filibuster? You need 60. The votes aren't there. Giovanna, it's a done deal. It's a done deal. And I think Barack Obama knows this. Again, the hope is that what I heard John Dean say tonight on Overman's program, that the bill is so poorly written. I think Steny Hoyer wrote it, didn't he? It's so poorly written that it leaves a window wide open. Now, maybe the Senate will close it. And that window does not address criminal charges. It only addresses civil charges. That's what these 40 lawsuits are about against the telecoms. So if criminal charges are left up in the air, then you can get into the RICO Act. You can get into a conspiracy to violate the Constitution, to however it is phrased, if it is ever phrased, a conspiracy between these telecom giants and members of the Bush crime family. Now, even as he said it, though, John Dean kind of had a wistful look on his face, as though, yeah, it's a possibility, but there's also a possibility that in the next Mega Millions lottery drawing, I'm going to walk out of here, Keith, with, $75 million in my pocket. No, he didn't say that, but that was what the look on his face seemed to indicate. We'll be back after the break. Stick around. A moment with Bob coming up next, then your phone calls and all sorts of fun and frivolity. Do we have any more sound? Oh, yeah, we have that thing by George... George who? Galloway. Yeah, the British MP. And I want you to hear this. So we'll play it. I don't know. We'll play it next hour. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. She calls them South Zero, and she just-
The Mike Malloy Show. Talk radio matters here.
26 before the hour here on the Malloy program, and not on the Malloy program. That's kind of universal here in the Eastern time zone. It's time once again for A Moment with Bob. Yes, you can tell by the music that it's time once again for A Moment with Bob. Brought to you by your friends at the telecom companies. I don't know. Brought to you wherever. Hey, Mike. Last night I was reading a book about Route 66, the legendary highway that ran from Chicago to Los Angeles. The author reached Tulsa, Oklahoma on page 132 and took a picture of a monument. Inscribed on the monument was 1921 Black Wall Street Memorial and a list of names. The accompanying paragraph read, quote, outside the Greenwood Cultural Center, a somber marker bears witness to the Tulsa race riots of 1921. Whites stormed the neighborhood, killing more than 300, burning 36 square blocks and herding more than 6,000 people into a nearby stadium. Recent investigations have discovered mass graves in the area that may push the number of the dead even higher, end quote. I couldn't get my head around the numbers. More than 300 people dead, 6,000 people rounded up, 36 square blocks of homes and businesses burned. I put the book down, went to the internet, and Googled further. Came up with this at Wikipedia, quote, although official counts put the number of dead at 39, 26 black, 13 white, it is generally accepted that this number is substantially higher, especially among black victims. Based on the evidence available, the actual number of black citizens believed to have been killed during the riot may be around 300. Of the same 800 people admitted to local hospitals for injuries, a vast majority are believed to have been white, as both black hospitals have been burned in the rioting. Several among the black dead were known to have died while in the internment centers. And from ExodusNews.com, quote, from the evening of May 31st to the afternoon of June 1st, 1921, more Americans killed fellow Americans in the Tulsa riot than probably any time since the Civil War. Rumors still persist that hundreds, not dozens, hundreds of people were killed and that bodies were crudely buried in mass graves, stuffed into coal mines, and tossed into the Arkansas River. If so, the Tulsa race riot would go down as the worst single act of domestic violence on U.S. soil since the Civil War. Worse than the 1965 Watts riot, the 1967 Detroit riot, the 1992 Los Angeles riot, and the 1995 Oklahoma City bombing. End quote. As I read, I tried to imagine what it must have been like when families fled for their lives as whites went on a killing, burning rampage. What was it like to have thousands of your neighbors spontaneously and collectively snap and turn on you in a murderous rage because of the color of your skin? What was it like for the survivors to return after losing everything and try to rebuild a new life while still living next to a people who had gone insane and tried to wipe them out? And what was it like to live in America during the 1920s? When the Ku Klux Klan membership was about 15% of the nation's eligible voting population. Then I thought, why don't I know about this? But then, why should I know about this? I'm a white man who grew up in white America, went to white schools, and read white history. I went to school for 16 years and still didn't know about one of the most horrific events in American history. George Santayana said that those who cannot learn from history are doomed to repeat it. But don't we have to learn our history first? James Loewen established in his book, Lies My Teacher Told Me, Everything Your History Textbook, Your American History Textbook Got Wrong, he established in that book that we can read American history books cover to cover and still be historically illiterate. Loewen writes, quote, textbooks keep students in the dark about the nature of history. They employ such a godlike tone it never occurs to most students to question them. As a result of this, most high school seniors are hamstrung in their efforts to analyze controversial issues in our society, end quote. We're studying our history by reading the stories of American historical figures as heroes. We all learned in school how Helen Keller was blind and deaf from infancy. When she was 10 years old, aided by her teacher, Ann Sullivan, she bravely overcame her disabilities. By the age of 24, Keller graduated from Radcliffe, magna cum laude, becoming the first deaf-blind person to earn a Bachelor of Arts degree. As far as the American textbooks are concerned, the end. What we're not taught is Helen Keller's life after she dropped out of our textbooks. She was a suffragist, a pacifist, a radical socialist, supported birth control, and helped found the ACLU. Keller and her friend Mark Twain were both considered radicals in the socio-political context in the United States, and as a consequence, their political views have been forgotten or glossed over. Yeah, we live in historical times, but without a historical context. What happened today is going to shape our immediate future. The House passed the Steny-Hoyer-FISA bill today and now goes to the Senate for debate next week. The Vichy Democrats, collaborating with the Bush regime, have brought this country closer to the brink of totalitarian madness. We've been here before. We've always turned back. But as stockbrokers are compelled to tell us, past performance does not necessarily predict the future. From Ted Rawls' recent article at CommonDreams.org, quote, deranged leaders who carry out horrific acts of mass murder and oppression with the consent of the people are hardly new to American history, reminds Alan Weinstein, archivist of the United States. Quote, begin with the Salem witchcraft trials of the 1690s. Move forward to the Alien and Sedition Acts of the early Republic, and from there to the suspension of habeas corpus during the Civil War. Turn then to the arbitrary political arrests of the First and Second World Wars, and the many abuses of the Cold War McCarthy era, and from there, the civil liberties climate in our time, end quote. But those temporary excesses, Weinstein assures... But those are temporary excesses, Weinstein assures, according to Ted Rawl. Self-corrective forces at work in American society, you know, lefties, liberals, a swing vote on the Supreme Court, always pull us back before we careen off the brink. Disaster is always avoided. We've seen hundreds of My Lai villagers murdered in a ditch, thousands of black Americans trying to escape from insane white mobs in Tulsa, atrocities committed in our name in Afghanistan and Iraq and in secret detention centers scattered around the globe. Yes, we have always pulled back before we go too far. But oh, the damage we do before we stop. And that concludes another Moment with Bob. Brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling. Nah, not really. Nobody sponsors A Moment with Bob. I just find his writing very philosophical. Cat Mary in Memphis. I think, is Cat Mary in Memphis? Yeah, she is. She sends me, Mike, I got this today from the Bill of Rights Defense Committee. It's BORDC.org, Bill of Rights Defense Committee, BORDC.org. It's for an ad to be placed in the New York Times on July 4th. Those who donate or sign will have their names in the New York Times. Of course, that might be convenient for identification, but what the hell. And here's the ad. It is headlined, "To These Ends, We Mutually Pledge Our Lives, Our Fortunes, and Our Sacred Honor. The People's Campaign for the Constitution, A Declaration for Our Times," by Christopher Pyle. When in the course of human events, the government becomes destructive of the ends for which it was established, it is the right of the people to alter it and demand restoration of those constitutional principles that have so long assured their liberty, safety, and happiness. Therefore, on the anniversary of our independence, we offer this new declaration for our times. The history of this president is one of arbitrary usurpations of power, the effect of which is to establish tyranny through false promises of greater security. He has created a multitude of new programs and set swarms of petty officers to spy on Americans in a misguided effort to combat foreign terrorism. He has invested these agents with sweeping new powers to monitor our conversations and ransack our personal papers and effects without judicial supervision or any reason to believe, as the Constitution requires, that a crime has been committed. He has further claimed the power to disregard legislation that Congress has passed. He has suspended the laws and treaties against torture, authorizing the kidnapping of mere suspects, and transported hundreds of prisoners beyond the seas so that no independent judiciary could question the legality of their mistreatment. He and his supporters in Congress have granted amnesty to the officials who unleashed torture and humiliation upon helpless prisoners to the disgrace of our nation. He has denied these prisoners access to attorneys, family, and friends, and has claimed the right to try them before military tribunals specifically designed to disregard the most basic principles of law. He has imprisoned thousands of lawful immigrants for months without charges, under brutal conditions until his agents, rather than independent courts, decided that they pose no threat. He has wrapped his usurpations of power and his deprivations of liberty in thick cloaks of secrecy, thereby showing contempt for the rule of law and the proper functions of Congress, the courts, and the press. At every stage of these oppressions, we have sought redress, but our petitions have been answered only by repeated injury. We therefore resolve to resist these usurpations by all lawful means at our disposal. To this end, we insist that the powers of our national government be shared by all branches of government and not concentrated in one alone. And we call upon Congress, the courts, and the press to reassert their constitutional functions vigorously and restore the promise that is America. To these ends, we mutually pledge our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. People's Campaign for the Constitution. Now, you can get some information about this by going to B-O-R-D-C. B-O-R-D-C.org. That stands for Bill of Rights Defense Committee's People's Campaign for the Constitution. Once again, B-O-R-D-C.org. And we'll post this at our website tonight, too. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Stay with us.
George W. Bush will give a country a push. He's the man who'll do what's right for me and you. George W. Bush will give a country a push and put us back on the road to what's right and true. George W. Bush will give a country a push. He's the man who'll do what's right for me and you. Now Republicans and Democrats and Independents too. Well, they all like what W's done. I know that you will too. George W. Bush will give a country a push and put us back on the road to what's right and true.
He's the primal scream you suppress. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
It's about 9 before the hour. Dominic, listening in Japan, writes, Mike, listeners who question your sanity for criticizing the Democratic Party sound like battered wives who make excuses for their abusers or perhaps sufferers of the Stockholm Syndrome. Continuing to vote for the Democrats and expecting a different result following every election is itself the definition of political insanity. And our military affairs correspondent writes, in the symbol of the Democratic Party should be changed now from a donkey to a huge white flag. And she references the vote today in the House. This is from Jen, who writes, Mike, I wish I was articulate enough to call in, so I guess I will compose my thoughts in this email. Oh, come on. I'm dumbfounded that this vote by a Democratic majority in the House has just thrown away the only part of the Constitution, the military commission's. Jan, that sentence doesn't work. Everything the founders of this country worked for completely destroyed by 7 years of the worst mistakes that happened to this country, the usurping of President Gore's first term. I am so numb, I can't believe I'm writing to you now. I will vote for Obama in November as my last-ditch effort, but I'm not holding my breath. The new type Democrat is too sly and too slick. They woo the people with promises of doing what the people want, but then they stab us in the heart as they smile and claim they never said they believed what they said they did. So what should we do? Start teaching the children the new pledge? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United Corporations of America and to the almighty dollar for which it is used to bribe and destroy. And so on. Jen. Phone calls, starting with Virginia in Alameda, California, listening on the Internet. Hey, Virginia.
How you doing, Mike? I'm not accepting all this crepe hanging on a Friday night.
Oh, okay.
Absolutely not, because, first of all, we're not doing our job, my love. In our media, our job is not to quote AP articles with one-sentence quotations taken out of context to say that now Obama is also for NAFTA.
Wait a
that
second.
Who's, is a bunch of bunk.
Who's doing that?
That is the article that you were quoting.
No, 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 no. Virginia,
source.
Virginia, wait a minute.
One sentence.
Wait a
everyone
second, Virginia, Virginia. Okay,
one.
Boom. Don't do that, Virginia, or you will not get on this program. Don't do that. What I quoted was from the Toronto Star. And it needed to be quoting. And if you don't want to be crepe hanging, fine. Have a drink, kick back, and relax. If you can. I don't know what burr is up your butt tonight, but I'll tell you the same way I tell the right wingers. You don't call this program and show that kind of discourtesy. You don't do it. AJ, the Music Factory, is calling from the Catskills. Hey, AJ.
Hey, handsome, how are you?
Fair to partly cloudy. How are you?
Well, better dead than red, Mike.
Well, that's always a good expression.
Yes, sir. You know, I was going to talk about Russert tonight, but I have to tell you, I got to change my mind and talk about FISA, you know, because, you know, I'm burned up about it.
Sure.
Before I do that, I want to quickly say that I listen to a lot. Actually, I listen to all the liberal media that there is out there, and I really don't like any of it. But I listen to it because it's water in the desert,
mm-hmm.
And there seems to be a style right now in even the liberal media, which is to, you know, report the stuff, but as it relates to the host.
Yeah.
It's a lot of self-aggrandizing, and that includes half the hosts on Nova M. And
we only have two.
Yeah, I know that. And so I want to say, Mike, if you ever go in that direction, you'll break my heart.
No, I won't. I'm too old for that nonsense.
Because this show is just so, you know, so perfect. I would hate to see it go in that direction. Anyway, I want to tell you that, you know, I've been listening to you talk about the Democrats, and I'm usually in step with you on most of these things, but I've been holding back on thinking that the Democrats are quite the loss that you've been articulating.
Uh-huh.
Today, with this vote, I am absolutely convinced that Pelosi and the rest are not merely, they didn't cave in, they're co-conspirators. And I just can't, you know, every time I move further and further out on the extreme on these things, I amaze myself because
you want to say some more?
Sure, please.
All right, I have to take a break here. Let me put you on hold. And just bookmark your brain so we can pick it up where you left off, okay? This is Nova M Radio. My name is Mike Malloy. We'll be back after a fairly long top-of-the-hour break. Stick around, though. Don't go away. Promise? Welcome back. Past the hour. Oh, by the way, happy summer solstice. Does it happen tonight? Tomorrow? Tonight? Now the days get shorter here in the northern hemisphere anyway. Days begin to get longer for our friends who listen in the southern hemisphere. Either way, up here we call it the summer solstice. I guess y'all call it the winter solstice down in Australia, New Zealand, and Chile, and places like that, right? I sent an email to a friend tonight. I truly wish tonight of all nights, because the weather here is really, really been nice the past few days, alarmingly so. Low humidity, warm days, just nice for Atlanta for this time of year. Normally we're starting to hit the 90s. Matter of fact, we had a week in 90s. But the weather's been real nice, and the only Wiccan rituals I've ever participated in were one was a waning moon ritual, which was a lot of fun, great fun. And it does have an effect. It really does. So I wrote to a friend tonight. I wish I had a connection in here in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains, i.e. the Atlanta area, where I get together on a Saturday night or a Sunday night for one of these rituals, if they fall on those particular nights. Because if you've never done one, participated in one, I should say, it is just amazing. It is. If one were going to be a believer, I would think that what is offered in Wicca is it's perfect. It really is. It's perfect. It really is. Equal balance between male and female aspects. Total respect for the earth. Okay. I'm sorry. Never mind. Starting to sound like a preacher. Let's get back to AJ. AJ, the music factory, who was patient enough to hold on, especially through my little rant about wanting to get out of my skin and run around in my bones with a bunch of Wiccans.
Not at all. And, you know, for winter solstice, my Liza, my wife and I, we put together our own ritual. And it can be just as meaningful as anything else.
Sure, absolutely.
So, anyway, I'm reminded of, I'm thinking tonight of January 2007 when the Democrats took over the Congress.
Mm-hmm.
And when Pelosi took the gavel.
Right.
And I screen grabbed and saved things all over the place for posterity.
Yeah.
And now I could cry because it was a put up job.
Oh yeah.
And you know, what can I say? I mean, the Democrats that voted today have to be ousted, like the Republicans that we ousted 2 years ago. Same spirit. I mean, you know, that's the disorienting part.
It is.
To be targeting Democrats with the same spirit and intent with which you targeted Republicans.
That's right. That's right. It is very disorienting.
So, very quickly, I will add, since I have the time, that I listened to XM, and I heard that this weekend they are going to be broadcasting all weekend tribute to Tim Russert.
Oh my God!
So this just continues on and on. And
what really, is this? What is this madness? I mean, what is this madness?
I don't know, Mike. But what really shocked me last week was, you know, it wasn't so much the coverage, because it resembled when Anna Nicole Smith died. I mean, the media is a snake that eats its own tail.
Right.
And so that part didn't surprise me much. But what surprised me was the politicians, the dignitaries, the diplomats, the elected officials that had appeared over the years on his program and said he was my personal friend, he was a good man, our kids went playing together, we went on barbecues, and I thought, why?
Yeah.
You know, his job was to be apart from that.
That's right.
And if the moderators and the journalists, he was not a journalist, but if he was a moderator, if these people are literally sleeping and vacationing and palling with the people that they're interviewing, how in the name of God can we expect them to be honest and dispassionate and want to extract the truth?
Yeah, can't.
So it was that was the part that was absolutely shocking to me, Mike.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a shocked person tonight. What can I tell you?
I know the feeling. I have really been ripped by so many emails about people who said I just didn't get it about the Russert thing. But I feel the same way you felt. If he is being praised by the people that he was supposed to report about their deviousness, their lies, their tricks, their sleight of hand, their trickery, their treachery, their lickery, their lechery, all of it. You know, if these are your friends, you're right. How in the hell do you report on them? And I watched Face the Nation, or Meet the Press, I'm sorry, Meet the Press, too many times and saw too many examples of why Bart Kopp and I referred to him and many more as media whore number one.
Yeah.
You're right. He was not a journalist. I don't know what the hell he was. And now, as far as his death, as far as his friends and his family, why, hell yes. I mean, their father, their brother, their son, their dad, you know, died. The right of a wake and grieving is anyone's right in this country. I don't deny that. I didn't even touch on that.
Yeah, but Mike, it's worth human empathy. It is not worth a week and a half of media coverage.
That's right.
See?
I mean, what happened that made Tim Russert, who hosted the Meet the Press for what, 17 years, all of a sudden he's some sort of a journalist god or I don't know, a cultural icon. How did that happen? It's because his people at NBC decided to make it happen. There's no news here. It's one man's death. One man's death. Like your family member, my family member, somebody else listening. It's one man's death, and it should be grieved by the people that loved him. What? Are we to believe that George Bush loved him? Give me a goddamn break. I am so sick of this. This is what they do to us, AJ.
Yep.
This is what they do to us.
What concerns me even more now is that his replacement, not that the show was any great shakes to begin with, but his replacement now will be an even fainter copy of him.
I know.
So they're putting Brian Williams in there temporarily, but whomever they put in there is going to be, you know, it's going to be just very, very softballs are going to be pitched. So I want to, you know, thank you and Kathy for superb work.
Well, that's very kind of you to say. Thanks a lot, AJ. Take care.
And peace. We'll talk to you soon.
We'll do it. Better red than dead. Better dead than red. Better dead than red. Tamara is calling from Joplin, Missouri, listening on the Internet. Hey, Tamara.
Well, hey, Mike. I'm a little hoarse because I've done a lot of screaming and a lot of crying over the last several days.
Oh, really?
Well, everybody seemed to miss the fact that they gave these rat bastards more money for killing people in Iraq.
Yeah, it did, didn't they?
And they're going to keep sending our kids there.
Yeah.
And my son's one that's heading over there.
Oh, no.
They're not even going to give him time to come home.
Oh, God.
To see his grandmother or me before they ship him out. And we haven't seen him for 18 months because every holiday the military sends him to do stuff.
Uh-huh.
So then they did the FISA thing today, and I just sat down and I cried.
Oh.
And then I got online and I sent Cindy Sheehan $25. Now, the way I look at it is we need to give the good people the tools in which to beat these rat bastards out of our government.
I hear you.
And the tool is money, cash.
Yeah.
Stop buying crap at Walmart. Stop blowing money at the movies. Send it to people that we really think are going to make a difference. And Russert, that just was the icing on the cake for me, because these rat bastards haven't shown one military funeral.
Yeah.
Not one.
Yeah.
In any state in this country have we seen the corporate media show the grief of what's going on. And the way I look at it, I decided, I got online and got that poem, and I forgot to leave the page up. But it was the poem that, "Don't go softly into the night, rage, rage."
Yes.
And that's what I'm doing. I'm raging. And the way I'm going to rage is I'm going to give $25 every single month or every week to somebody that I think deserves it. Because, you know, it was my congressman, Roy Criminal Blunt, who put up that FISA bill today. And well, I'm so sick of the DNC. Every 2 years, we beg the DNC to help us down here in Missouri's 7th District to get rid of this crook.
Tamara, I got to leave it there. My best to your son. I hope everything's okay for him. Thanks for checking in. We'll talk again. We'll be right back.
Yes, she does.
Go gently into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
Twenty-two past the hour. Is this from a blog site? Where is this from? Cheney gets the last laugh, is what it says here. Vice President Dick Cheney has won his battle to withhold records from the public despite efforts by Congress. And the Democrats are conceding defeat. The party's top investigator in the House of Representatives, that would be Henry Waxman, acknowledges that there is nothing more he can do to force the vice president's hand. Waxman said, quote, he has managed to stonewall everyone. I'm not sure there's anything we can do. Waxman said that despite Cheney's turning this administration into one of the most secretive in history, there's not much here anyone else can do because the administration has only a few more months left in office. One of the things you remember that Cheney argued was that as the tie-breaking vote in the Senate, he's not exclusively part of the executive branch and therefore not subject to the public record standards that have been applied in the past. Ah! A leading watchdog group says agrees that Cheney will probably leave the White House without turning over the precise number of records he has determined to be classified or a detailed list naming who he employs, on and on and on and on. So this miserable son of a bitch with the little device in his chest is going to get away with it. He's going to get away with it, right? Of course he is. And as far as, McClellan today saying that Cheney should be forced to testify, oh, come on, Scott, for Christ's sake. Get real. There's no way in hell, in 30 hells, in 100 universes, that anybody in the executive branch will testify about anything because of so-called executive privilege, which I don't believe is in the Constitution anywhere. But somehow it has metastasized into just about every sort of discussion about holding executive branch thugs accountable, going all the way back. Who's the first one that used that? What was it? Was it Nixon? I don't even know. It's not in the Constitution. Where? Somebody tell me. Where is it? Executive privilege, my ass. Why don't these people understand, and purely rhetorical, don't answer, that they are employees of us? Oh, God, what a quaint notion that is, huh? Anyway, Cheney is home free unless and until a war crimes tribunal is assembled and charged this murderous son of a bitch the way he should be charged. Nothing outrageous. Just use the Nuremberg model. Use whatever war crimes model you want to use. There's several out there. But that probably won't help or happen either, right? Back to your phone calls. Paula is calling from Bayonne, New Jersey, listening on the Internet. Hey, Paula.
Hey, Mike.
How are
what
you?
What a day, huh?
Yeah, what a day is right.
You know, it's days like today where I thank the invisible man in the sky for you and my fellow truth seekers on the Democratic Underground Truth Seekers thread. I haven't given them a shout-out lately.
No, you haven't.
And I want to give them because we're here every night. And yeah. We love Marge, by the way.
Yeah, Marge is, I don't know. I have a picture in my mind of Marge, but I've never met her, and I feel like she's part of my family.
We love Marge. I wish she had a computer so she could join us.
I wish
she has a fan club. She has a fan club.
I know. We offered to send her one, and she said, nah, I don't think so.
I'm telling you, I love Marge.
I do, too.
She's like one of my favorite people in the world. Anyway, well, I called about this FISA nonsense. And, I mean, a lot of callers have, you know, mentioned, but it's just outrageous. And what bites my ass is the timing. The timing. I'm sure most of the presidential primaries are over.
Right.
And I'm sure most of the local primaries.
I'll tell you what. Hold on a minute, Paula. Just hang on to the word timing, because we have to do a break here. And I want you to expand on what you're saying here. All right. So don't forget. Timing. We'll be back in a minute with Paula in Bayonne, New Jersey, and you, if you're on hold, stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
That's how the lead gets in.
And your day screaming with Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
Mother, do you think she's good enough?
It's about 25 before the hour. We're talking with Paula in Bayonne, New Jersey. All right, the word we left off on was timing.
Yeah, the timing. Well, I'm sure, in addition to the presidential primaries being over, so we have a nominee, and what
right.
are we going to do, vote for John McCain or Ralph Nader, please?
Ralph Nader's looking better and better to me.
Well, I voted for him in 2000.
Well, so. Maybe, well, go ahead.
But also the local primaries, most of them, I'm sure, are almost over. I'm sure, you know, if mm-hmm. any Democratic congressman is going to face a primary challenger, that risk is done. So they waited
mm-hmm.
till they would have the least amount of accountability to hardcore liberal Democrats.
Well, that's true. Plus, look how fast Pelosi scheduled it. She filed the bill yesterday and scheduled it for a vote today. Nobody had a chance to read it. They just all lined up like good little ducks and voted.
And my critter did, too. And I'll tell you, so I called his office today. I called him yesterday to mm-hmm. beg him not to vote for it.
Yeah.
But he voted for it, so I called him to answer, and you lost my vote, and I will not vote for him. And if you live in New Jersey's 13th Congressional District, do not vote for Albie Osiris. Don't vote for the Republican, but, you know, if there's a Socialist Workers Party candidate on there, vote for that guy. Because it's just frustrating. It's like they're thumbing their noses at us.
What about Nader?
What about Nader? I don't know, Mike. I don't know. See, I'm still kicking myself. I mean, I didn't cost Al Gore the election. He took New Jersey.
Oh, no, hell no. You know, that's one thing that I really did a 180 on way back in 2000. I was, you know, willing to line up with everybody and say, well, Ralph Nader cost Gore the election. No, he didn't. What cost Gore the election was his own tactics prior to, you know, when the voting was stopped. He could have continued it using a different means. And also the Supreme Court, it wasn't Nader. But you know, Nader is really getting up there in years. What is he, 68 now?
Or, no, I think he's actually,
in his 70s?
70, yeah.
Is he in his 70s?
I think so. I don't know for sure.
You know, this has been pointed out to me time and time and time and time and time again, and I'm sure you know this too. Every single position that Nader takes is a liberal Democratic position. He's running as an independent, but every single position he takes, I defy anyone to show me one position that he takes on any issue that is not the standard definition of a liberal Democrat. I'm starting to feel like an absolute dumbass for continuing to advocate for the Democratic Party when they continue repeatedly to just toss people like me and millions of others, you, in the creek. Over and over and over again. Now, I had an email tonight from Bridget who pointed out that 127 of these, or 124 of these Democrats did not vote to emasculate or kill the Fourth Amendment. But the fact is 105 of them did. So, and the Democratic Party leadership is what is going to hell. And then I read two stories today about Barack Obama waffling on the NAFTA thing. And then what was the other thing? The FISA thing.
Well, his stand on the FISA thing.
Huh?
His stand on the FISA thing was
right.
Outrageous. Well, right. I wasn't all gung-ho about Obama anyway. I mean, I supported Edwards.
Well,
in the primaries. And when
sure.
he dropped down, I just kind of pulled away and said, you know what, whatever.
But I'll tell you, after I started paying attention when Kucinich and Edwards dropped out and started listening to Obama, I thought, hey, maybe. But now I'm starting to think, no, not maybe, not baby, not maybe. You know, he's very charming, a very good speaker, can really get the adrenaline flowing. But what, I don't know.
Part of the thing with Obama was that just he was just put before us as this Christ-like figure. Who was gonna, you know what I mean? He's Christ incarnate. He's gonna,
right?
You know, and I'm like, he's a politician. He's, you know what I mean? I think
I do.
I would have more respect for him if he changed his campaign slogan from "Yes, we can"
yeah.
to "Well, maybe we'll see." And then, you know what I mean? I might give him a, you know,
maybe,
okay, at least he's being honest.
Wait a minute. Maybe we'll see.
Well, maybe we'll see. Yeah, that should be the new. You know what I mean? When my mother always told me, it reminds me when I was a kid, and I wanted something, like a toy or
maybe
I desperately
we'll
wanted
yeah,
a bike.
I know. Yeah, we do that with Molly now. Well, maybe. We'll see.
Well, my mother would always say, when my ship comes in.
When your ship comes in.
When her ship comes in, yeah.
Right. Did it ever come in?
No. And I was, by the time I was seven, I kind of figured out, no, there isn't a ship with my mother's name on it that's just going to pull into port at one any day, you know.
Right.
And that's kind of what I feel like now. So I don't know what I'm going to do. You know what? I think of it like waiters and waitresses.
Yeah.
Basically, for me not to tip a waiter or a waitress, they have to take a dump on my plate and call me the C word.
Right.
Then you won't get a tip. If anything other than that, you're going to get at least 20% from me.
Yeah, right.
And that's kind of how it is. You know what I mean? I'm going to piss and moan and probably vote for Obama in the end.
Probably do it anyway. Well,
because a strep throat is better than flesh-eating disease.
It's that's true. But, you know, I've done that for the past two or three elections, and I honest to God, Paula, I don't know if I can do it again.
It's tough, and it gets harder and harder.
Yeah, it does. All right, sweetie. Listen, thank you very much for checking in, all right?
Have a great weekend, Mike.
I love to hear from the Jersey girls. Take care. Take care, Paula. I always feel better after her phone call. I don't know why. She didn't say anything uplifting, but I always feel better after her phone call.
Is Ralph Nader older than John McCain?
Yeah, he is. I think, how old is McCain? 71? 70? 71? I think Nader is like mid-70s.
I think they were both born before talkies.
But I think if you look at Nader and look at McCain, I think you'll find that Nader is apparently a hell of a lot healthier. And he's more articulate, and he's a liberal Democrat. I don't care if he runs as an independent or a green or a socialist or a clown. He's still, and I know. I say it every year. I scream that Nader just lays back until it's time for the presidential sweepstakes, and then he pops up. And the thing that cannot be escaped, if you look at his positions, what do you go? RalphNader.com? I'm not sure. If you look at his position on the issues, he's a liberal Democrat. He's everything that his positions are everything, are all the things that liberal Democrats keep screaming about. Why doesn't Obama say this? Why doesn't Pelosi say this? Why doesn't anybody say this? Why didn't Ted Kennedy say this? And every single damn time that you go to Nader's website and check his position on the issues, you find absolute paralleling with your beliefs if you're a liberal Democrat. I don't know. I hate to think that I'm getting so old I've become a creature of habit. I've said before, you know, 50 years ago when I was a kid, it was just understood that you voted Democratic. Not that I voted 50 years ago, but you know, my parents, the parents of all my friends, everybody in the neighborhood, everybody not in the neighborhood, everybody voted Democratic. In Ohio, well, at least in Toledo, Ohio. Why? Because the union stewards told you to. But as I got older, I found out, well, okay, that makes a lot of sense. Democrats, yeah, this is what they're for. This is what they're for. This is before I realized how racist the unions were at one point and yada, yada, yada. Nothing is ever as it seems, right? Nothing in American politics or the Middle East. It's all illusion. It's all mirage. I don't know about you folks, but I sometimes think I have lived my short political life. It hasn't been that long, but my short political life in that state of delusion, not illusion, but delusion. But enough about me. Stephen is calling from Sussex, Wisconsin, listening on the internet. Hey, Stephen. Yo, Stephen.
Hi, Mike.
Hey, Stephen.
Hey, Mike, you're extremely gloomy the last couple of days. Let me say something uplifting for you.
Okay, well, I'm not really gloomy. I just being a realist. Gloomy. All right.
It's hard to be optimistic. But let me just give a different perspective to your listeners because I think we are on the verge of historic time. When I say historic in a sense that is going to change history for the rest of time. And 1989 was such a historic time in Eastern Europe. And 1776 was the last time it was so historic in this country. Mm-hmm. And I think the reason for it is not Obama, and it's not McCain, and it's not Nader, and it's not the Democratic Party or the Republican Party, but simply because the empire is untenable, mm-hmm. and the masters finally figured it out. In other words, economically, it's unsustainable. The military spending and the strong arm.
Hey, Stephen, hold on a second because I got to do a break. Just stay right there. We'll take a break and come back because I want you to finish up. This is Nova M. I'm Mike Malloy. Before the hour, thanks to our crew for tonight and all this week. Ian Huff, Billy Foster, Ben Birch, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, Sharon Gordy, and Catherine Bay. Back to who are we talking to? We were talking to Stephen in Sussex, Wisconsin. All right, go ahead, Stephen.
Yes, well, basically, I just wanted to say that I think the next president will have to make hard choices as far as the right. empire goes, and we will have to dismantle it very similar fashion than the Soviet Union, Mikhail Gorbachev, had to do it.
Or the way the British had to do it.
Exactly. Exactly. Otherwise, we're facing dust bowl depression again, and I don't think anybody wants that. As crazy as McCain is and the Republicans are, they are just about realizing that this is not working. The world is pushing back. It started with the European Union, the euro challenging the dollar status. It's now Asian countries, Asian economies are forming their own group. Mm-hmm. Latin America is rebelling against it. In the Middle East, it's not going as well as they thought. Unlike many, I don't think Iran is an option. Maybe some limited bombing, but not invasion. And so I think we're in an exciting time. I think Obama, in many respects, is very similar to Gorbachev. Gorbachev was a lawyer. He knew the dark side of the empire. His father spent 9 years in the Gulag. Mm-hmm. And he kind of snuck into the party establishment as a reform communist. And in 1985, completely took out the old party establishment, the old guard. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what's going to happen if Obama comes to power. McCain, I think it's going to be a little bit more painful for the American people, but the inevitable cannot be stopped. I don't think so.
Well, you make some excellent points, Stephen. Thank you so much for calling in tonight. I hope we hear from you again. Good points. Good points. Thanks, Stephen. John McCain, or no, Ralph Nader is 75 in February.
Oh, gee, where do I sign up?
Well, this is a racist, ageist, sexist society. So, given all that, McCain. I'm sorry, Nader. And Nader scares people because he offers everything that liberal Democrats are supposed to want, but he seems to be floating in space, like he's not grounded. What do you mean by grounded, Malloy? Well, he's not grounded in the sense that, you know, love him or hate him, McCain or Obama. Oh, you mean he doesn't have the corporate backing? No, I don't mean that. There's just something else. He just seems so airy. I wish he would have started making his presidential runs, 35 years ago. Is this from Captain Mary? Regarding, this is things that are younger than John McCain. There's a website, thingsyoungerthanmccain.com. Thingsyoungerthanmccain.com. Polyester is younger than McCain. So is the first TV commercial. So is the lubricated condom. So is Buddy Holly, if he were alive. So is the discovery of oil in the desert. But, see, I don't, to me, age is a good thing, obviously, because I'd like to get there. Not that I'm not there already, but I mean, really there. You can't get, philosophical approaches to life that are grounded in reality from someone who's 25. No offense to the 25-year-olds, you know what I'm saying. But if Nader is 75, that kind of wipes that out. I had no idea that, that makes sense, polyester. I remember the advent of polyester. And how my mother used to just turn it into some kind of hardened mass on the ironing board because she wasn't quite sure how to... What? You're raising your eyebrows and looking at me rather funny.
You remember the advent of polyester?
Yeah, it was in the 50s.
What's an iron?
What's an iron? Is it time to go home yet? We're getting close, aren't we? This is from Gail, who writes, Gail, Eva, Mike, we have been punked. Have we been punked again or what? It hasn't been easy keeping hope alive these days about much of anything. I'd even let my guard down about Barack Obama, way down, even honestly feeling swept up in the mania of inspiration. I've really needed to believe. It begs the question, are we just another set of true believers like Eric Hoffer wrote about? Are we, in fact, doomed to some fantastic version of hell? P.S. Ralph Nader is a hero of mine, despite all the wailing and gnashing of teeth by those who call him a spoiler. Yeah, if you haven't read Eric Hoffer's book, The True Believer, that I read, it just seems like a lifetime ago, but it was written back in the 50s, I think. You need to read The True Believer. Interesting points of view. Is it time to go? Please let it be time to go. I'm ready to call it a week. I really am. Thanks to everybody for participating this week. However you did that, if you just kicked back and listened, that's fine. It is the summer solstice, so have some kind of a good weekend, all right? Start the music. You can't start the music. Doo-dee-doo-doo. Doo-dee-doo-doo-doo. Well, we only have 14, 12, 11, 10 seconds to go, and not enough time to take a call, although I see that there are like five or six people holding on when I talk about Cindy Sheehan. By the way, she's going to be on the program Monday night, so hope you're going to be here too. Is it Monday, Kathy? Monday night, Cindy Sheehan? Okay. Take care. Have a good weekend, okay? Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. I'm going straight to hell. Just like my... Have a great weekend. Kevin Kinney, wherever you are. I'm going straight